Hospitalitychain.com, the world's first online hub designed for the hospitality, culinary, and catering industry. From leading food and beverage brands to professional food service equipment, Hospitalitychain.com makes sourcing simple. Search, select, buy direct, and save all in one global marketplace. Welcome to another episode of the Fell Into Food Podcast. I am your host, Chef Jeff Fell. Today, I've got Emra Nation, the National Accounts Manager and Culinary Development Specialist at Oregon Fruit. Join us as we uncover the juicy details behind Oregon Fruit's rich history and its essential role as a major fruit supplier for brewing in the United States. Looking for current industry trends? Emra serves up Generation Alpha's preferences to the rising popularity of tropical fruits. We talk recipe development to the exciting plans for expanding beverage offerings. Get ready to quench your thirst for knowledge in this fruit-filled world of beverages as Emra Nation pours out insights from Oregon Fruit's Orchard Oasis. Enjoy. So how you been? What's new? Especially as I got to say congratulations on innovation, right? Director of Innovation now?
Yeah, I'm our National Accounts Manager and Culinary Innovation Specialist.
Culinary
Development. I don't even know what the title is, but yeah, it's official. I'm a culinary person now. It's very exciting.
Yes. I've arrived. When we met, you could tell you had that kind of background because the stuff you were coming up with, the drinks you were coming up with, it was definitely not just a typical, let me just add a little this, a little that. It was some pretty cool stuff.
Yeah, thanks for saying that. It's something that I absolutely love doing. When I came over to Oregon Fruit, it was like very clear that this wasn't just like going to be a sales job. Like when I applied, my final interview was, I think it was like 3 hours long, and I was in the kitchen,
wow,
like feeding people. And it was so much fun. I was like, okay, this is definitely where I want to be. I'm into this kind of stuff. So it's fun to have a more formal role here.
Yeah. Who doesn't like the creativity to be able to do stuff, especially, I don't know, in a company like Oregon Fruit? And maybe it's probably good to just give a quick little background of who Oregon Fruit is. I did a little research on when they started and things like that. But you guys got a lot of cool stuff going on and pretty rich history. So maybe give a quick background of who Oregon Fruit is.
Yeah, Oregon Fruit is a rad company. So we started in the mid-30s with canned fruit. In fact, I have one sitting right here. I put my pencils in it. So we started in canned fruit. And we're still on supermarket shelves. And the idea was we wanted to bring like the bounty of the Northwest to everybody, right? So we wanted people at home to be able to like bake with really high quality dark fruits that grow so well up in Oregon, the Willamette Valley, and just basically give everyone the best that we have. And over time, we've kind of developed into other segments of business. So what a lot of people don't realize is we are the biggest supplier of fruit for brewing in the whole country.
Wow.
So we're in about 3,000 breweries nationwide, and we've got like insane market share there. So if you've had a fruit flavored beer or a cider, odds are you've probably had some Oregon Fruit before and you didn't realize it. So
yeah,
we're like the biggest one company you've never heard of.
That's what I noticed when I was doing some research. I was like, whoa, wait a second. Like, again, when you're talking about some of these different fruited beers, and I have at breweries, then my mind went to, oh my gosh, this probably is their product. And it never really connected that that's part of the portfolio and what it's going out to. It's just such a unique area that I guess most people wouldn't even think about.
Yeah. And it's not like when you're drinking a cider or a fruited beer that you're like, oh, I wonder where the fruit came from. No one cares as long as it tastes good. But
right,
all the brewers will tell you like, oh, their stuff is just the best. And you know, this is what we use and here's why. And so it's fun when we go into like food service operators and you see they have a whole bunch of beers on tap and you're like, oh, that's probably our apricot and our watermelon and our products. And it's really cool to be able to tell that story of sort of integration all across the board. It's pretty unique.
And you guys use a lot of local farms too, right?
We do. So we source as close to home as humanly possible and then kind of work in concentric circles outward. So, you know, all of our dark berries, blueberries, we use Marion blackberries, raspberries, apples, all that stuff comes from the Northwest. And then, you know, things like mangoes and passion fruit, not so great for our climate. So we source that stuff from other places. But yeah, we work as close to home as possible. And it's like a romantic kind of patriotic story, right? We can go down to the blueberry farm and be like, hey, Bob, what's up?
That's
you know,
so
we need
cool.
some blueberries. Yeah, I love it.
And then to know that that then is going nationwide, it's got to be a good feeling, especially again in your position, national accounts manager. You maybe entail a little bit what a national accounts manager does. I think that is also a title that people see and they go, what do you mean you oversee national accounts?
Yeah. So basically it's a sales job, right? So I travel the country and I work with national chain accounts and see where our products are going to be a solution for them. Like, I'm not out to just peddle fruit and just sell crap. I want to like make a meaningful difference to their bottom line and like be helpful. So that's really kind of where my role technically falls. But then I get this like added benefit of the second part of my job doing all the culinary fun beverage mixology stuff.
Yeah. So how do you find time between the two different positions? I mean, technically it's one, but really it's almost two independent. Sales is usually one. Culinary innovation is usually one. And you're kind of doing both. So one, how do you find time to do it? Or do you have some sort of crazy scheduling that you keep yourself to? Or do you just go with the flow? And even as you're out doing national stuff, you're doing culinary innovation?
It's a little bit of both. I mean, you know, you sleep when you're dead, but... I definitely try to make time. You know, I work from home several days a week. And so my fridge is loaded with product and I'm always just kind of tinkering around. And, you know, I get the huge benefit of being able to like work with chefs all the time. And I pick their brain and like, oh, what do you think about this? And, you know, and then I come home and just sort of throw ideas together. And sometimes I'll have full days committed to being in the kitchen. And some days it's maybe an hour or two, but you take what you can get.
Yeah. Do you use any technology to help you with some of that? Or is it just through the grapevine of asking people your background, your knowledge?
It's a lot of trend data. We work with Technomic really closely. And so anything that I'm working on, I always try to start with Technomic trends of like what's happening in the demographics of our country and what are operators really struggling with and how can we help solve these problems? Because, you know, if I'm not solving a problem, I'm not going to have a long-term solution for anybody.
Right. So
like, make it make sense.
Yeah. We always talk trends on here. And since we're already talking, what are you seeing? What is this year brought? I guess we're almost first quarter's almost over if you think about it, which is crazy to think.
Yeah. How did that happen?
Where are you seeing trends going? Where have they started this year and where do you think they're going to end up?
Oh my gosh. This is a big question, Jeff. I don't know where to start. What I've been really excited about is we've been learning a lot about Generation Alpha and, you know, in this industry, but we've always got to be paying attention to what the kids are doing. What do the kids want? This generation is so interesting to me because, first of all, they're the first generation in America's history that is not predominantly white. Mm-hmm. Kind of exciting. So we've got more kids with more food experience and different palates and different customs in their households and foods that they've been exposed to, which is just super, super exciting. But what else is really interesting about them is very different than how I was brought up. They're the ones making the decisions as to what's for dinner. And it's not mom and dad choosing anymore. Mom and dad are done at the end of the day and they're like, I don't care. What do you want? Let's order it.
Yeah. Yeah.
And so you have to try and find solutions for, you know, it's what's going to get the kids excited and also what's going to meet the parents' needs. But these kids are getting their data and they make decisions based on social media and like apps. And so we all need to be paying attention to that and making our food look as beautiful and as exciting as possible to get these young kids super excited about it.
Yeah. And I've been really pushing fruits and vegetables in our house and to get them to eat. And we've found, I guess maybe my kids are alpha. What age generation is alpha?
So these are the kids that are not yet in college.
Okay.
Young.
Okay. So mine are probably even lower than that. They're 7 and 5. So.
Oh yeah. Just a little.
My little guy who's 5, to get him to really latch onto fruits, we've done a lot of pouches. So there's a lot of different types of pouches that have the fruits. And he thinks it's just this cool, fun way to eat. Because if I put a blueberry on his plate or a strawberry on his plate, he won't touch it. He's like, no.
Isn't that funny? Dad.
But you magically put it in a pouch with 5 other fruits and vegetables, and it's magically delicious for some
reason. Right. It becomes interactive, something he can play with.
For sure. So with those kids making the decisions, is there a particular, I guess, what is the trend with those kids? Is it more berry-centric? Is it tropical? Is it, what are they leaning for or what are they going towards?
It's definitely more on the tropical side. You know, I mean, the biggest demographic in America the fastest growing demographic, I should say, is the Hispanic demographic. And it has been for well over a decade. And so tropical fruits and, you know, mangoes and pineapples and things they would typically see in that part of the world is what really resonates with them. And so we're seeing more and more of these young people, and even up until, you know, Gen Zs and millennials, they want passion fruit and they want guava and they want all these fun tropical dragon fruit and things that most people aren't going to find in a grocery store. That's mm-hmm. exciting to them. And so it's fun to play with those flavors, because I certainly didn't grow up with those in the wild, exotic world of Salt Lake City.
Well, you're seeing it in mainstream things like the Starbucks, right? When they bring out strawberry dragon fruit or those type of things, they're bringing it mainstream. So clearly, obviously, that's what people want these days.
Oh, totally. And dragon fruit is so funny because it doesn't actually taste like much. And so you have to infuse something else in there. But that color just knocks people out. And again, it's that Instagram moment, right? Like, oh my gosh, this is so pretty. And if we ever show that at trade shows, it's always women are like, oh, I have to get this. It matches my shirt. Like, you know, it's fun. It's pretty. It's fun to drink.
Yeah. So maybe let's kind of rewind a little bit and talk about your path to how you got into the position you are. Because I think when you gave me your background, it was pretty cool to see how you had said, that it found you didn't find it, correct?
Yeah, oh, totally. Like, I'm the perfect example of I don't think any little girl dreams of growing up to sell mangoes for a living. Let's just say that. But here we are, and I absolutely love it. But I actually started in this industry I moved to Oregon. I was in my early, early 20s, and I just kind of was working retail, and I wanted to find a more steady job that didn't require me to work weekends and I could have a regular paycheck. And, you know, I just wanted a normal job. So mm-hmm. I applied at this vegetable processor, just entry-level admin. And it turns out this industry is really interesting and there's just tons to learn about it. And it's so complex. And I was just kind of drawn in by how much there was to learn. And it kept me so engaged. And so 12 years later, when I left that company, I had gone through, I think, 6 different titles, and I left as the sales manager for our national and key accounts from starting as this little admin that didn't know anything from anything about food service. So it's been a wild ride, but I feel so fortunate to have worked with so many interesting people who are willing to take the time to educate me, because I may not be the best student, but I ask a lot of questions and I'll be really annoying about it. And I was lucky to have a lot of people who tolerated me and educated me on so many things. So very fortunate to have a lot of mentors in my life.
But I think you're on to something there, asking a lot of questions and not think, even if they might be perceived as dumb questions, they're not, because you don't know what you don't know. Because I went through the same thing when I was learning how to do purchasing during COVID. Mm-hmm. I had zero purchasing background. I was an operator. That's right. What I did. So it was just asking people in the industry. I'm like, well, I don't know. What do you think? And they would give me an answer. And even if they looked at me like, dude, you're an alien. Why don't you know this? I'm like, I don't know left from right. I'm looking for guidance. And then you start to sift through kind of some of the BS and you can tell who's kind of leading you along and who really is like, oh, he really wants to learn or understand. And I think it's in the day of information, it's so easy. I think we can ask, but people are afraid because they just don't want to. So you're spot on with just asking around the industry for advice, what's happening. And people are more than happy to provide it, especially in our industry.
Oh, totally. And information comes from the most unlikely places. You know, I never think some admin or somebody that's handling our accounts payable is going to know this, that, or the other. And you never know. I still every day am learning something. And so even though I've been in the industry for probably 17 years or 18 years, it's I still am constantly engaged and learning. And there's just so many layers to food service.
It's
always fun.
It is fun, especially we just mentioned, if you're willing to learn. If you're not willing to learn, then it's not, in my opinion, then it's not. You're just going to get complacent. You're going to do the same thing day in and day out. But if you truly want to know, there are so many segments. Again, seeing what you guys did and when I met you out in Food Ovation a couple years ago, I was like, wait, I had no idea, to be honest. Oh, there's these companies that they make all these fruit purees, and now knowing that you distribute to breweries, you don't think about that stuff when you're in your own little bubble, especially here in the Midwest.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, totally. And that's like my favorite. I love those Food Ovation events because it's always the first question of like, what do you know about Oregon fruit? And most people say nothing. I've never heard of you. And they think we're some kind of like fruit board or something. And so when we can like be like, oh my gosh, this is so much fun. Let me tell you all about us. And then you start feeding people and like, is there anything greater in the world than, you know, you do your homework on a customer and then you make something special for them and you watch them eat it and like the surprise and like delight on their face, like nothing brings me joy like that feeling of like, yeah, we just nailed it.
That's right. I think a lot of us culinarians on the hot food side, that's why we get into it, because you make a plate, you see someone eat it and their eyes light up and they're just like, oh my gosh, this is the most amazing thing. Even though you grueled over it for who knows how many hours, it just, the little meat, the meter fills up because somebody got enjoyment out of something that you were able to do. So it's your art on a plate. And in your case, potentially in a cup, and you do some crazy, crazy fun things. I was seeing on the website, I want to talk about, like, there was spreads, donut fillings, like some crazy stuff that you guys have on the website. Maybe talk a little bit about that.
Yeah. So what's really interesting about our products, I have one right here. These are a frozen fruit product, right? And so they come in two different formats. It's called pourable fruit. So we have ones like this that have little pieces of fruit suspended in a sweetened puree. And then we have some that are just completely pureed. So just different textures. What makes them really unique is that they don't have any pectin in them. And so we can really play around in the culinary space and start cooking. And like, I had no idea that fruit was so good in so many savory applications until I started playing around with it. And you start seeing like, oh my gosh, what if we did like a breakfast sandwich with an apple schmear and some cheddar? Or like, what if we did, you know, a spicy mango sauce on some wings? Or let's do some pork ribs and cherry barbecue sauce. You know, we've been doing al pastor tacos with pineapple. And it's just like, once you start playing with it, like the possibilities are so endless. And it's so exciting to like really start latching on a flavor. And then taking those savory applications and kind of moving them over into a beverage space has been like a wild new experience for me that I'm having so much fun with. So I have to tell you, my new favorite little crowd pleaser beverage, we do this in a bubbler, right? So we make lemonade and then I add our passion fruit puree to it. And then I add a little Tabasco sauce.
Ooh,
and now you get this spicy passion fruit lemonade, and that vinegar that's in that hot sauce just really pops it. It is so good. If you're going to be at Dot, come taste it. I'm going to have it there.
I don't think I'll be at Dot this year. I'll be at NRA. I don't know what all shows I'm at this year.
Come see me at NRA and we'll show you.
If you're going to be there at NRA, then I'll have to swing by and give that a try. Because when we met, you did something with jalapeno and I don't remember what it was, but it was something jalapeno and it was a drink and it was so good. And my sensories were going all over the place because you have that heat, but it's bringing out the sweetness and it just all worked so well.
Yeah. I wish I could remember what it was, but I do love playing with jalapeno. I mean, we'll do like a pineapple jalapeno shandy or, you know, stuff like that. It's so much fun to play with this stuff because you just don't know until you try something. It's like, this sounds like it might be weird, but.
Right. So what does the recipe development for you look like, you know, from conceptualizing to testing to actually, you know, suggesting or implementing, what does that look like?
Yeah. So for me, it's so much, I just always start in Technomic. What are the hot trends right now? What are people looking for? What's going to be cool? And then I kind of have to play it like not just what's cool in fruit, but like what kind of proteins are hot and like what kinds of sauces are cool and what are people doing? You know, and then it's, talking to chefs, my favorite people, my creative lunatics, you know, and I scour the internet to like, what is there something interesting you can do here or what? More than anything, it's just going to the grocery store, buying a crap load of random ingredients, and then kind of playing Chopped in my kitchen.
Okay,
so I've got these things. Let's see what I can do. And, you know, I'm so fortunate, again, to just know so many people that I'll be like, what do you think about something like this? would you test this? And they'll be like, oh, here's why it won't work, or here's why it will. And then you test the theory. But yeah, I mean, it's kind of a long process. I'm also super fortunate that our R&D manager was a chef previously. So he is an enormous help on a lot of this stuff, because he also understands the food science and can tell me, oh, these textures might be weird, or this might cause that kind of thing, particularly in beverage. So he's just a wealth of knowledge for me. But I'm very fortunate that the office is my group of guinea pigs. So they have tasted a lot of winners and losers over the years.
What's the biggest winner? What's the biggest loser?
Well, I'll tell you what. We came up with a killer burger recently. It was a peanut butter and jelly burger.
Oh.
Sounds interesting, right? So we added a little bit of like soy sauce to the peanut butter to give it a little more like umami note.
Okay.
And then put it on a burger, just standard cheddar, and then Marion berry puree. Forget about it. So good. And then I did try to do a smoothie. I can't remember what I had in it, if it was guava or something, but I tried to get creative with botanicals and it got a little out of hand.
Well, I mean, you win some, you lose some, like you
That's
said.
That's right. You what live, other, you learn.
Exactly. What other kind of challenges do you run into when you're working on this? Is it seasonality stuff? Is it, you know, because you're in your own kitchen? I don't know if that it provides any sort of barrier to testing.
For me, the biggest challenge, the reason I do a lot of my development in my home kitchen, is because as much as I like to do it in the test kitchen at the office, I get interrupted a lot. People smell things and then everyone wants to know what's going on in here. Got anything for me to taste? And so just trying to like get things done can be a huge hindrance. But and then, of course, when I come home, then it's like storage space, because I don't have the same amount of fridge and freezer space as I do in the office. So those are my biggest challenges. But I'll tell you, seasonality is an interesting subject to bring up, because that is one that I absolutely have learned so much about, as to what fruits are seasonal and what you can do with these seasonal ingredients, and how an operator could like make a seasonal beverage or make a seasonal whatever. It just like the flip of a snap of a finger. And what I love about these products is it gives operators the real freedom to like customize what they're going to do, and they can make their own blend. So what if they wanted to do a pomegranate blueberry tea or a tangerine cranberry, whatever, like world's their oyster.
Right. For sure. That's super. I totally understand that. And as I'm learning more about produce, talking to different people in the industry of what things are stored, what's actually picked fresh, and understanding when we hear in season, again, there's some leeway in time with travel times, and depending on where you live, it can really affect the quality of the product that you're getting, which leads me into wanting, you know, you guys use pretty much top-notch, high-grade. Maybe talk about your ingredient panel, because I was looking through it, and it's a pretty good list you have there.
Yeah, pretty clean. Yeah, we are very meticulous about who we source from. And we've got an awesome procurement team who does a lot of work along with our QA team to make sure that our suppliers are GAP certified and that they maintain the quality that we require. So product comes in, QA looks at it, R&D looks at it. Is this going to fit the bill? Yes or no? And a lot of times the answer is no. And, you know, for us, it really is about just making sure everything is top notch, because that was really how the company got our start. Is everything had to be grade A, and if we're not keeping up with that quality, why are we even bothering? And that's the thing I genuinely love about this company, is that we don't screw around with half measures anywhere in the company. You know, whether it's operations or even like or just our building, everything is top of the line. Our QA is meticulous. And it's really nice to be able to say, like, I actually sell quality products, and we use a really clean ingredient statement. Fruit is always the first ingredient, because we are a fruit company. So let's make it so. Which I just think is really cool.
When you've got products you stand behind, you can feel it as a buyer. When a salesperson is presenting or showing their product, you can tell who really is all about their product and who is just – it's a product because maybe it's a broker, right? And they've got 20, 30 products. You can tell what they're passionate about and what they're not based off of just how they talk about the product when they're talking to a customer, and not even in a bad pitchy salesy way. They really just care about the products. And I think that's what drew me to you when we saw your presentation. It wasn't this just buy my product because you should. It was here's all the applications. This is amazing. And just the energy was just tenfold when we walked in the room.
That's awesome to hear because I am extremely enthusiastic about them. I get really lost by like people who can like sell water and sell things that they don't believe in. Like, I don't know how you do this because if I don't believe in it, there's no way I'm going to sell it. I can't. Right. So I don't.
Yeah. What kind of projects are you working on currently? I know we've talked a little bit of trends, but what are you actively working on? If you can let anything out of the bag.
Yeah. We definitely do have a really super exciting top secret project going on that we may have to talk about in the future sometime, Jeff. Have me on a Q4. We'll talk. But we are actually looking at kind of expanding our beverage offerings. So instead of just having lemonade, well, you know, maybe we look at doing a limeade. Maybe we look at having a sweet lemonade and a sour lemonade. Maybe, you know, so we're kind of playing around in that space. But something I'm so thrilled about, I cannot wait for us to have it, is we are going to take those purees that we sell to breweries and to ingredient customers, which is just fruit. There's nothing else added to it, no sugars, no anything. And it's a shelf-stable puree that we want to launch in food service. So it's about getting the packaging right, but we're getting close and I can't wait.
Yeah, you get shelf-stable. That's a game changer for a lot of people on our side. Cooler freezer spaces, it's prime real estate. Dry, whether you have a dry room or not, everywhere else in the kitchen is dry. The rest of the building is dry. So it can go anywhere. And that has been astronomical in a lot of kitchens, getting products that are aseptic or shelf stable that still provide the same value because they're not having to take up that space in the cooler freezer, which a lot of times is why people will say, unfortunately, the pack size is too big. I don't have spaces for cases of fruit puree that have to sit in my freezer or my cooler. I just don't have that kind of space. So we're not going to be able to use it. We love it. We want it. We just can't use it because we don't have the space.
Totally. And we hear it all the time. And I'm just super excited because these products, you know, I mean, we've had them for years. We just have only sold them in bulk to other kinds of customers. And I don't know what happened. All of a sudden we're like, oh, here's an idea. What if we sold these in food service? Because a lot of it is people don't want added sugar, right? And so just having just fruit is a pretty big deal.
Well, yeah, most of these things do have added sugar, or it's not, even if it's added sugar, at worst case, at least if it's pure organic, you know, like cane sugar, that's better than the alternatives of what is out there. But yeah, just to get a solid format of an item, ingredient of one or two, it's very rare to see these days because it's just, it usually costs so much money that the consumers, it's just, no thanks, I can't afford it.
Yeah, it doesn't fit and it doesn't pencil. Sorry. So yeah, I'm super excited about that project. And as soon as it comes on, like it's going to be cocktail hour at my house. I'll tell you that much.
Nice. Also, Oregon's pretty big on sustainability. I was doing a little research and you guys do have a lot of different initiatives. Maybe touch on that.
Yeah, I mean, because I kind of come from this agriculture background in food service, like sustainability is, it's necessary. Like you can't grow food without being sustainable or your farms won't sustain. You can't keep growing. So, you know, farmers and growers have to pay attention to their crops and what they're putting into their soil and how they're feeding their land. But, you know, at Oregon Fruit, it's less about the growers because we don't own farms. We source our raw material, but we are always looking for ways to like reduce, reuse, recycle, that kind of thing. One wonderful thing that happened during the pandemic was that, you know, we had these initiatives that we wanted to meet by 2023. And since no one could like go out and we couldn't sell things and, you know, the production plant was kind of moving slow, we took a bunch of money and like invested in ourselves and we got our plant, like we reduced our water usage, we reduced our electricity, we put in these big giant fans so we wouldn't have to rely on air conditioning and just all these things to really make make the company run a little more efficiently and the building run efficiently. And we met those goals in like 6 months, right?
So, wow. Thanks, that's COVID. Impressive.
Yeah. When you get everyone rolling in the same direction, that's what happens.
I think those that leaned into it and took it as an opportunity, like you said, to invest in yourself, to make, knowing that you can't go out and looking mm-hmm. inward, those are the companies that have really pushed through it and really thrived out of it, because it's now a selling point to a customer who says, well, what are your initiatives? Well, this is what we did during COVID because we couldn't get out. I think you guys reduced water consumption, I think 50%, I think is what 50%. I read, which
yep.
that is huge. People don't understand that kind of energy or water consumption reduction is massive in multiple ways.
Oh, absolutely. Well, and the amount of water you have to use just to like rinse fruit is insane. And so being able to find ways to refilter and reclean that water and reuse it is just, it's been a game changer for us for sure.
For sure. Yeah. I love it. Let's get in the weeds a little bit. So I got to know, since you work at a fruit company and you probably had a lot of fruits, what are your top three fruits? Doesn't that be fruit puree? Oh, just top three fruits all time.
This is like asking me to choose a favorite child, Jeff. Come on.
Well, you get three favorite children.
Three favorite children. Okay. I'm going to say passion fruit. Turns out, love passion fruit. Didn't know that. That one's really fun. Cherries. I used to not like cherries, and I adore cherries now, of like all varieties. It doesn't even matter what kind. I like cherries. And talk about versatility. Those are not playing. And then I think I'm honestly going to say marionberries.
Explain for people what a marionberry is, or that flavor, how they grow. Cause I don't think a lot of people know what a marionberry is.
You are 100% correct. This is a very Oregon fruit. So marionberries are a type of blackberry, and they were actually introduced to the marketplace in the mid-40s by Oregon State University, that has an unbelievable food science program. They're just amazing. So what they did is they married a Shehalem blackberry and a Ulali berry. And the Shehalems have a kind of RNA lineage that has loganberries and raspberries and, you know, some other blackberries. And basically what they did is they bred those and created this marionberry. And marionberries grow only in Marion County, which conveniently is right where our processing plant is located. So, nice. Marionberries are a little bit longer. They're bigger than typical blackberries, and they really benefit from some of the like iron rich soils that we have up here in the Willamette Valley. And so you get this, like, for lack of a better term, it's like the Cabernet of berries. It's got this nice earthy kind of bold flavor. It's not overly sweet. It doesn't get those same kind of bitter notes that you can get in typical blackberries. But they are just, any Oregonian will tell you marionberries are that's what summer tastes like. They're just delicious.
They're phenomenal in ice cream.
Yes.
There's a particular ice cream I eat quite a bit of, and they put it in there. They're up there in Oregon, and it is.
Yeah, let me guess who that might be. Some good friends of ours.
Yeah, I'll be talking to Josh actually here in a few weeks, so I'm going to get to pick his brain. But yeah, marionberries are absolutely amazing. Okay. If you had to pick one food and you had to put fruit on top of it and eat it for the rest of your life, what would it be?
Oh boy. One food, cheese.
Cheese. Okay.
Let's get real. Fruit and cheese. It's like a match made in heaven, brother.
It is. Any weird combos have you had, or any particular types of cheese and fruit that everyone eats? Grapes and strawberries with their cheese. What else? What else would you throw in there?
You know, I'll be honest. I have sort of fallen in love. Speaking of our friends over at Tillamook, they have an aged cheddar, a white cheddar that is like so divine.
Is that the 10-year?
The 10-year, of course. Because we're all spoiled, right? Yeah. This beautiful 10-year aged cheddar. And it's great with any kind of berry, but I kind of love it with peaches. Peaches, so good.
Yeah.
And apricot. Apricot's quickly becoming a favorite of mine.
Do you go standard like yellow peach, or are you white peach?
I like a yellow peach, but yellow peach. I'm not picky.
I grew up on a farm. We had white peaches, so I'm always particular to white peaches. When they come in, I'm always biased, and I'm like, I can't eat you, yellow peach. I'm sorry. White
Very peach
has
bougie.
my heart. It is. Well, when you have them, same thing. I grew up on a farm, and at my grandfather's place, we had white peach trees. And as you're mowing, like, we didn't let anything hit the ground, but you would just drive by the mower, and you just grab one off the tree, and you would just start eating it, because we didn't pesticide or anything. It was just that's what naturally grew out on the farm, and it was just an amazing thing to just have fresh fruit, like you said, especially where you're at in your backyard, where you can have access to it all the time.
Mm-hmm. I will say that sounds like the makings for a sticky lawnmower.
It is. If you run over them crab apples and regular apples, yes, it makes for a nasty mess. But as long as you keep them clean, then you're in good shape. you said you're going to be at the trade shows. So what ones are you going to – where are you going to be at? And when, and I can link all these in the show notes of the times and the dates as well, but where are they going to be at so they can come try all of your amazing concoctions?
Wonderful. So we are going to be at the Dot Show. I wish I knew my booth number off the top of my head. I do not, but I can get that for you. We're also going to be at NRA, of course. And then we are doing another Food Ovation event in the fall. So anyone who gets lucky enough to go to one of those, if you know, kind of a thing. And then we do shows for customer, you know, their franchisee events and stuff, but we're going to be at the Chain Gang down in May as well, in Long Beach.
What is that? I don't know what that one is.
Yeah. So it's put on by the folks that do Market Vision, and it's basically for chains that are headquartered down in Southern California, and they come together for kind of an afternoon and meet with a few vendors, and it's a really fun kind of casual short little show, but It's great. It's a great way to connect with your industry friends.
Super cool. Yeah, I've never heard of that one. I'll have to look that one up. Where does everyone go to find your awesome recipes, the stuff you've been working on, what's available? How do they contact you?
Yeah, I mean, oregonfruit.com is probably the best place. And we are rebranding right now, so the website is going to get really cool looking here in the next few months. Email me, call me, text me, whatever. Get in touch.
I can vouch she will get back to you ASAP with the answer to your question, or she will find the answer to your question. So, Emra, thank you so much for taking the time out today of your busy schedule to chat with me. And until next time, we'll catch you on the sunny side.
Thanks, Jeff. We'll see ya.
HospitalityChain.com, the world's first online hub designed for the hospitality, culinary, and catering industry. From leading food and beverage brands to professional food service equipment, HospitalityChain.com makes sourcing simple. Search, select, buy direct, and save all in one global marketplace.